irritated, jealous, know-it-all, kook, lame-brain, leery, liar, litigious, loco, loner, loon, loony, lunatic, mad, maniac, mean, menacing, mental, millennialist, mistrustful, mobilized, narrow-minded, nasty, neurotic, nonconformist, nut, nuts, nutty, obdurate, obscene, obsessed, obsessive, odd, offensive, opinionated, out, overcritical, overly sensitive, peculiar, perplexing, persecuted, pessimistic, picky, prejudiced, prickly, provocative, psycho, quarrelsome, querulous, questioning, radical, rebel, recluse, remorseless, repulsive, rigid, scary, self-important, skeptical, squirrely, startled, stiff, strict, stubborn, survivalist, suspicious, tense, terse, testy, threatening, touched, touchy, treacherous, trigger-happy, truculent, truther, unbalanced, unbelieving, unbending, uncompromising, uncultured, unforgiving, ungenerous, unromantic, unstable, unwavering, unwelcoming, unwell, unyielding, uptight, victim, victimized, vindictive, wary, watchful, weird, whiner, withdrawn, worried, zealot. Their effect on you. Working the complaint desk in the FBI taught me how paranoid personalities gradually alienate everyone around them, slowly exhausting the goodwill, patience, and charity of others. I remember one visit in particular from a paranoid personality and his wife, because I was struck by how sad she looked as she patiently sat with her husband while he ranted about this or that while pulling newspaper clippings from a worn shoebox, making endless allegations against the government and the United Nations. There was nothing the FBI or I could do for him and his outrageous allegations, so after an hour or so they left. Later that day, his wife called from a payphone to apologize and to thank me for lending an ear. She explained that he had become this way after the Vietnam War and was getting worse each year. Their kids no longer came around, and his fixation on government wrongs was all-consuming, and frankly was overwhelming her. I told her that there was no need to apologize, but wondered if she was okay. Her answer surprised me. "No, I'm not okay," she answered, holding back tears. "He makes my life a hell, but what can I do? I'm stuck." And then she hung up. Police training doesn't prepare you for this. I can still picture her pathetically sitting there, patiently listening to yet another rant. This is one of the reasons why I decided to include the paranoid personality in this book, because much of the damage this person does is psychological. Family members often express to me that they were emotionally broken down as a result of living with a paranoid personality. Those are strong words with huge implications. Let's be clear. Paranoid personalities will suck the joy out of your life. They will make you tense, worried, irritable, and edgy. You see, you must view and fear their enemies as they do. Otherwise, in their opinion, there is something wrong with you. You can't relax around them. And if they perceive you as disloyal, they'll take out their contempt or anger on you. Your wishes and desires are of no concern, as you quickly learn they have a one-track mind or a single fixation. You won't be alone in your inability to break through or establish trust when they are at the more virulent end of the paranoid personality spectrum. No one can, not family, not therapists, and not the police. They'll air their grievances at work, on vacation, in line, at the lunch counter, anytime they see an opportunity. Conversations devolve into diatribes. Even compliments can rouse their suspicions, such as the time my father told Mr. P., our neighbor, that he liked the used car Mr. P. had just purchased. That just made Mr. P. even more suspicious of my father. They can force you to change the way you live, making you constantly adapt to that foreboding world they fear. When they bicker at work and get laid off, it is you who has to step in and work extra hours to make up the difference in income. When they become obnoxious with the neighbors, you will have to do the fence mending. You'll have to change your routine to accommodate paranoid people because they tend to become insular and withdrawn, and they expect you to be as well. Conversely, at the other end of the spectrum, they can become difficult and argumentative. No matter what, they expect you to believe as they do and see the world through their paranoid prism, whether you like it or not. Their enemies must become your enemies. In extreme cases, they may take their whole family to live in the middle of nowhere, as happened when former Green Beret Randy Weaver and his wife took their family to live in a cabin they constructed in Ruby Ridge, Idaho, in 1992. These personalities can seek extreme isolation, believing that some apocalyptic event is imminent, joining the ranks of the preppers who are prepared for some horrendous catastrophic event, often exposing their family to deprivation as well as ridicule. They can expose you to danger for reasons you may never fathom. To me, the saddest situations occur when the paranoid personalities decide to isolate themselves with their children within the confines of a cult, as we saw with those who followed Jim Jones to his compound in Guyana, exposing their children to the squalor of a dengue-infested jungle, and the paranoid rantings of a narcissistic megalomaniac wasn't enough. The final act was to kill their own children and themselves with cyanide-laced Kool-Aid. November 18, 1978. 918 died that day because they, or in the case of innocent children, their parents, believed. Like Jim Jones's followers in Guyana, everyone who associated with David Koresh, head of the Branch Davidian sect in Waco, Texas, in the 1980s and early 1990s was in danger also, as he truly believed he was divine, that only he had all the answers, and that an apocalyptic end was coming. Both he and Jim Jones demanded blind and unconditional obedience. Anyone who was against them was in peril. Remember, if you're not with them, you're against them. The paranoid personality in relationships. With so much perceived danger all around, don't expect effusive intimacy from paranoid personalities. They may care for you in their own way, but they're too preoccupied to think much about what others feel, and too guarded to share themselves fully with partners or friends. Conversations tend to be one-track, circling back to their favored issues. They have no real interests other than the agenda on which they're currently fixated. The result is limited, one-dimensional relationships. Because they view any conflict as an attack, they can't handle the normal ups and downs of relationships. So unless you feel like arguing with them constantly, you end up becoming compliant. In fact, spouses of the acutely paranoid personality become like Colonel Fitz's wife in American Beauty. Automatons, lacking emotions, perennially fearful of a backlash. Most people aren't aware when they first start dating a paranoid personality that they're being assessed for their pliability and willingness to go along with this person's ideas. This personality will quickly move on rather than spend time trying to convince someone with a skeptical mind, and will most likely select mates who are receptive and non-judgmental and who don't question. The problem is, many of us don't recognize this up front, because no one has warned us about the paranoid personality, and once we're committed, it may be too late. The wife or girlfriend of the paranoid personality often complains that her mate is always jealous, with absolutely no cause, calling frequently or dropping by work or home unannounced. Not out of caring, but to test her. This personality may scour your calendar, address book, phone records, or emails for signs of disloyalty or activities not approved of. At a seminar I led on paranoid personalities in relationships, one woman told me she'd found evidence that her husband had paid a surveillance team to tail her, and she was just going to visit a friend in another city. Paranoid personalities will insist on isolating you socially, so eventually you lose contact with family and friends. Why? Because no one is to be trusted. Even their own relatives will pull away, tired of the suspicion and vitriol. Chances are none of their friends will be people you'll want to spend a lot of time with, as they tend to attract other odd, eccentric personalities who dress, behave, and believe as they do. Again, other true believers. The whole family's life becomes limited by the circumscribed world of the paranoid personality, who may monitor or control communication. For example, not letting family members have cell phones or other devices, or tracking keystrokes on computers with special software to see what you really think or have been up to, or to keep you from being corrupted by the outside world. Dating may be forbidden, and staying out late, dancing, or even wearing makeup may rouse the ire of the moralistic paranoid personality. One woman came to the FBI to ask what she could do about the fact that her husband didn't want the kids to go to public school anymore. He would even put chalk marks on the car tires to make sure the car wasn't moved while he was away on business. What do you say to that? That is life with a paranoid personality. Paranoia can be inculcated in children as well as in adults. Joanne McGuckin and her husband moved with their 7 children to rural Idaho to isolate themselves from the world. After Joanne's husband died, their eldest daughter, 19-year-old Irina, recognized things just weren't right in their home, which had little food, no running water, and no heat. So she went to the authorities. Consequently, Joanne was arrested in June 2001 on a variety of charges based on neglect and deprivation of the children. When the police later returned to take the remaining children into protective custody, the children, rather than being grateful to be released from deprivation and squalor, went to battle stations consistent with the paranoid personality. They set 20-plus dogs loose on the sheriff's deputies, screaming, "Get the guns!" Those children then barricaded themselves against the police with weapons for a week. Joanne and her husband had taught their children to be paranoid, to trust no one. Events like this cause relatives and loved ones terrible stress and grief, not to mention the cost to the city and county for mobilizing police, emergency, fire, ambulance, and social welfare resources for days on end. This is precisely what happened in Waco at the Branch Davidian compound when law enforcement officers tried to arrest David Koresh. That attempt transformed itself into a threat against those who believed in the divinity of Koresh. When government agents tried to rescue the children from within the compound, the Davidians themselves set fire to the buildings, immolating themselves, rather than allowing the breakup of the group. The siege lasted 51 days, and 76 people died, including many innocent children. Once again, paranoia overrode parental sensibilities, just as in Jonestown. Encounters with the paranoid personality. As several clinicians have said to me, you see these personalities in every organization, and most are functional, but they make life difficult for those around them. In school, they may have the intelligence to do well, but don't seem to succeed or thrive, lacking the interpersonal skills to be a contributing member of the community. They alienate students and teachers who don't want to give them recommendations, which of course just proves their suspicions that others want them to fail. Sometimes these personalities look unkempt or dress like recluses or mountain men, inappropriate for most work settings. Or they wear paramilitary clothing and carry weapons to appear threatening. Or they cultivate a hostile, sinister, rebellious look with prominent tattoos, mohawk-style haircuts, or shaved heads. Most will find work, but they're always suspicious of management, of how decisions are made, of why they don't get promoted. They're the office malcontents, whether openly irritating and obnoxious or quietly plotting in their cubicles, often spreading discontent. Then there are the office saboteurs. They make sure that little things don't get done properly. Reports are delayed, deliveries are late, cars get scratched, calls aren't returned, or bills are lost, especially if things don't go their way. So the paranoid personality can use passive and not-so-passive aggression to sabotage those around them, especially those they deem enemies. Even if they're functional at work, they may be hyper-competitive, irritating, and contrarian, grumbling and complaining endlessly. If they see a group talking quietly, they'll think they're being talked about. At times, they can be seen muttering to themselves, which of course makes them an oddity. If they hear other workers speaking a foreign language, a valued skill set for any organization, they're the first to complain that they're being secretly talked about. With grandiosity in the mix, they'll think they're smarter than everyone, including the boss, and are being overlooked for advancement. Negotiating anything with them can be very difficult, as they're so mistrustful, and they're notorious for arguing with the boss, harboring suspicions of management's motives, spreading rumors, questioning procedures, suspecting favoritism, or bringing frivolous lawsuits. They may embark on endless letter-writing campaigns to air their grievances with superiors, or may go outside the organization to bring scrutiny from public officials. It should be noted that there are very successful business people that meet the criteria of a paranoid personality, but they come with their own quirks and odd behaviors consistent with this personality type. Billionaire Howard Hughes suffered from OCPD, obsessive-compulsive personality disorder, but he was also paranoid. He lived in isolation, thought his phones were bugged, and grew to detest meeting people, and insisted on dealing only with a few people he absolutely trusted. They were called his Mormon Mafia, because he mostly hired members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints to be around him. Companies may transfer a problem employee from department to department, thinking that this is the best way to deal with the paranoid personality. It isn't, because these individuals will be a problem wherever they work. And one has to keep in mind that the paranoid personality can be volatile. We just never know what that trigger will be, or when. Even police officers can be surprised by this personality's volatility when making traffic stops, serving warrants, or responding to domestic disputes. If the person has been drinking, or is on drugs such as cocaine, amphetamine, or methamphetamine, the potential for violence is even greater. Although by now the terms school shooting, disgruntled employee, road rage, and going postal are almost clichés, they're hardly ever associated with the paranoid personality, yet they should be, since paranoia is what most of these individuals who unleash massively violent rage tend to have in common. Teachers, students, and fellow workers may see behaviors they think are odd or moody, but don't recognize the warning signs of the paranoid personality on the brink of explosion. And when paranoid individuals rise to leadership positions or governance, the damage they can do boggles the mind. Some of history's worst atrocities have been driven by the paranoid personality's uncompromising hyper-suspicion, fear, and hatred. Joseph Stalin, Adolf Hitler, and Cambodian dictator Pol Pot were all acutely paranoid. They irrationally feared non-existent enemies and required that their followers do the same. The cost in lives is so staggering that words cannot do justice to their crimes. One life lost is a tragedy. How then do we characterize the loss of more than 30 million, Stalin, more than 5 million, Hitler, and more than 1.2 million, Pol Pot, and these are conservative estimates? It's unfathomable. We cannot comprehend such large numbers. But if we look away, if we don't act, if we don't call things what they are, we passively abet ignorance of a fundamental truth. When the paranoid personality rises to the top, mayhem ensues. In the end, paranoia's most enduring damage is the instability it sows between people. It tears at trust, harmony, and cohesion in relationships, in families, in organizations, in communities, and between nations. That is the toxic, tragic legacy of the pathologically paranoid personality. Your Dangerous Personalities Checklist. Warning Signs of the Paranoid Personality. As I noted in the introduction, I developed various behavior-based checklists during my career to help me assess individuals to see if they were dangerous personalities. This particular checklist will help you determine if someone has the features of the paranoid personality and where that person falls on a continuum or spectrum, from narrow-minded, argumentative, and rigid to annoyingly suspicious and questioning, all the way to highly unstable, volatile, or even dangerous. This will help you decide more precisely how to deal with this person, determine his or her toxicity, and assess whether he or she may be a threat to you or others. This checklist, as well as the others in this book, was designed to be used in everyday life by you and me, people who are not trained mental health professionals or researchers. It is not a clinical diagnostic tool. Its purpose is to educate, inform, or validate what you have witnessed or experienced. Listen to each statement in the checklist carefully and check the statements that apply. Be honest. Think about what you have heard an individual say or seen him or her do, or what others have expressed to you. Obviously, the best evidence is what you yourself have observed and how you feel when you are around or interact with this person. Check only the statements that apply. Don't guess or include more than meet the criteria exactly. If in doubt, leave it out. Some items seem repetitive or appear to overlap. That is intentional, to capture nuances of behavior based on how people typically experience or describe these personalities. It is very important that you complete the entire checklist as designed to increase its reliability. Each complete checklist covers very subtle yet significant issues that you may never have thought about. Some items may help you remember events you'd forgotten. Please listen to each statement, even if you feel you've heard enough or that the first few items don't seem to apply. Gender pronouns, he, she, etc., are used interchangeably in the statements. Any statement may be applicable to any gender. We'll evaluate scores when you're done, but for now, check off each item below that applies. 1. Believes that others seek to exploit or harm him in some way. 2. Is preoccupied with unjustified doubts about the loyalty of others. 3. Is reluctant to trust others, perceives them as deceitful. 4. Has unwarranted fears that others will use information maliciously against her. 5. Perceives others as demeaning or threatening, no matter how benign their intentions. 6. Holds grudges for a long time and is not forgiving of slights, even after many years. 7. Is very sensitive to how others view him. 8. Has angry reactions to minor slights, seems to always have an axe to grind. 9. Frequently questions fidelity of spouse or lovers without cause. 10. Has a pessimistic view of life or believes she is being persecuted. 11. Habitually questions the intentions of others, including his spouse, intimate relations, family, or workmates. 12. Is suspicious, without need of people, events, objects, or anything foreign. 13. Is quick to anger, or has been described as having a very short fuse. 14. Is jealous, with little or no justification. 15. Is distrustful of others, particularly foreigners or minorities. 16. Seems to have a high degree of anxiety in her life. 17. Feels a need to be guarded, secretive, devious, and scheming, or thinks others around him are that way. 18. Is reluctant or unwilling to entertain alternative views, readily dismisses them. 19. Thinks jokes have hidden meanings that are aimed against her. 20. Is unbending in thoughts and ideas, stubbornly holds on to beliefs. 21. Seems to know a lot about very little, arguing arcane information of little interest to anyone else. 22. Thinks he is very logical, but in fact his logic is at times faulty or skewed. 23. Argues frequently or provokes arguments with regularity. 24. Exaggerates and personalizes difficulties. 25. Sees herself as a victim of one or more of these things. Life, society, government, family, workers, conspiracies, cabals, etc. 26. Intentionally collects and hangs on to social slights, incidents of forgetfulness, or wrongs. 27. Has a reputation for making a mountain out of a molehill, always thinking the worst, or blowing things way out of proportion. 28. Has an inability to relax and seems constantly guarded, almost always serious, lacking in humor. 29. Lacks tender passion or softness. Everything is tension-producing and threatening. 30. Is constantly hostile, stubborn, or defensive. 31. Is envious of power and seeks to achieve it through shortcuts, cheating, or illegal schemes. 32. Is incapable of having anything nice to say about others. 33. Is reluctant to confide in others or reveal things about herself. 34. Space is a big issue. Doesn't like it if you get or stand too close. 35. Doesn't like it when people look at his house or his car and tends to lash out at them. 36. Communications all too often are full of anger or hatred toward authority figures. 37. Even at a great distance, has the same reaction as you might if someone stood too close to you. 38. Wears or displays ornaments, tattoos, signs, or other emblems, for example, bumper stickers, that indicate hatred or fear of others. 39. Seems to be always guarded as to what she is doing or contemplating. 40. Has very few friends or none at all. 41. Constantly looks for signs that others are conspiring or planning something against him. 42. Acts, behaves, or is referred to as being eccentric or odd. 43. Feels that institutions, government, IRS, work, church, school, employer, are seeking to do him ill or keep him down. 44. Claims that past failings at work or in relationships have been the fault of others. 45. Claims to have perfect recall of events and uses them to argue, yet those recollections are often faulty or biased. 46. Thoughts, beliefs, and prejudices are rigid and inflexible, becomes truculent when challenged. 47. Has belonged or currently belongs to a hate group or to an organization that is intolerant of others. 48. Criticizes the promotion of others at work as being the work of a cabal or a conspiracy, or done to perpetually punish or keep him down. 49. Has a pervasive suspiciousness of others, even of those she knows. 50. Is excessively self-important, or believes he is infallible. 51. Has found ways to isolate from others, be it at school, at work, or even in a big city. Is considered a loner. 52. Strongly believes that others will eventually disappoint or take advantage of him, and so he is always guarded. 53. Even when others are kind, suspects that in time their true face or feelings will show. 54. Refuses to let children attend school, fears they will be adversely influenced or polluted. 55. seems to have an unrelenting level of anxiety or apprehension in her life. 56. Tries to control what others think. 57. Has a generalized anxious feeling of pending doom or destruction, or that some sort of harm will come. 58. Seems to view the world in general as being untrustworthy, full of deceit. 59. Avoids going to the doctor because of distrust of physicians, medical equipment, or the medical profession in general. 60. Is intolerant of others' opinions. 61. Spouse or family is concerned when he goes out because they never know if he will argue or cause a scene. 62. Has repeatedly gotten into arguments with superiors. 63. Feels that the school system, or teachers has it in for him or his children. 64. Seems to have little respect for superiors and thinks of herself as better than they are. 65. Brings up different events from history to point out how things are conspiring against her or others. 66. Prefers that others stand at a greater than normal distance when they talk to him, and if they violate that space, gets very anxious, irritable, or angry. 67. Has purchased a weapon, or keeps a weapon nearby because he fears someone or a group is coming after him. 68. Has had multiple run-ins with the law. 69. Is distrustful of strangers even when seeking them out. 70. Literally rates people by how trustworthy they are. 71. Has a fear of institutions, technology, scientists, food, or some other unspecified entity or organization. 72. Collects articles, clippings, pictures, or license plate numbers of or about individuals or institutions that are conspiring against her or that she distrusts. 73. Is a known user of cocaine, amphetamine, speed, or methamphetamine. 74. Thinks telephone calls are intercepted or the room is bugged with microphones. 75. Feels that doctors do more harm than good, or distrusts modern medicine or pharmaceutical companies. 76. Believes himself to be above the law or a sovereign citizen, and that he doesn't have to pay taxes or even have a driver's license or license plate to drive. 77. Has a need to control family members very strictly. 78. Goes into a fit of rage when people accidentally trespass on his property. 79. Routinely sticks nose into other people's business, especially of family members. 80. Seeks to control the opinions of others, insisting they see things her way. 81. Often has an unrelenting one-track mind about this or that issue. 82. Has threatened a spouse or significant other for revealing personal information about him. 83. Conducts what he calls emergency, immediate reaction, or bug-out drills as preparation for dealing with threats, the end days, or some other apocalyptic event. 84. Forbids family members to talk to outsiders, even the mail carrier. 85. Gets upset when family members spend too much time talking to friends on the phone. 86. Has obtained a weapon or made an explosive device to punish or get back at others. 87. Is highly moralistic and judgmental. 88. When spouse or kids come home, they are questioned as to where they've been and about their activities, and are required to provide a full accounting of their activities. 89. Cell phones of family members are routinely examined to see telephone activity. 90. has stalked or placed a tracking device on the spouse's vehicle. 91. Has called, redialed numbers, or made queries to determine who has called and the purpose of the calls. 92. Refuses to give family members access to cell phones, computers, or other electronic devices so that they cannot communicate with outsiders or to avoid evil influences. 93. Becomes very upset when you challenge or ridicule her ideas, thinking, logic, or examples. 94. Has called others fools and naive for not seeing the threats that he sees. 95. Has curbed or restricted the activities of family members, spouse, children, so as not to be influenced by outsiders, disbelievers, or those who think differently. 96. Only she has a clear understanding of the threats that are out there. 97. Tends to be demanding and arrogant. 98. Has been fired for arguing with workmates or boss. 99. Is highly moralistic and sees the world as white or black. There is no gray area, no flexibility in thinking. 100. Tends to be unromantic, lacking tenderness or empathy in his interpersonal relations. 101. Has been taken advantage of by someone who purportedly believes similarly. 102. Is inconsiderate of others, or is considered rude. 103. Fears that physicians will use his body for experiments, or implant his body with some sort of device. 104. Continually pursues reinforcement of beliefs or fears through reading, radio, internet, or other means. 105. Spouse or loved ones often have to act as buffers with others or have to apologize for his actions or behaviors. 106. Has talked in ways to frighten others repeatedly or to make others fear for their safety. 107. Has killed or tried to poison dogs or cats that have accidentally crossed onto his property. 108. Frequently complains to city officials about minor grievances. 109. Perceives people in social and personal relationships to be either with him or against him. 110. Has alienated at least one family member because of her beliefs or because of unrelenting need to argue, accuse, or challenge. 111. Writes letters, emails, or other forms of communication that are always attacking something. 112. Thinks helicopters or airplanes are following her. 113. Seeks to find other individuals who are also suspicious and distrustful. 114. Has expressed that he trusts no one but himself. 115. Doesn't like people standing behind her. This causes her to become irritable, nervous, or visibly uncomfortable. 116. Prefers only the company of those who agree with his odd, peculiar, extremist, or eccentric ideas. 117. Never seems to be happy. All too often is on edge, or irritated. 118. Has the appearance of someone who is always troubled by something. 119. Keeps a secret place in the house or at work where no one is allowed. 120. Has talked about or actually moved out into the country away from others, expressing mistrust about having people close by. 121. Has joined or looked into a group, organization, or cult that believes as he does. 122. Lacks any interest in art or music, except in what supports her thinking. 123. Routinely drills with weapons to make sure he is ready to deal with any threat. 124. When he hears or sees vehicles, he hurries to examine them, or even keeps a list of cars he routinely sees that he claims are conducting surveillance. 125. Actually keeps a list of enemies, or those she deems suspicious. 126. Has gone out at night or at odd times to conduct reconnaissance, to check on neighbors, or someone he deems suspicious or a threat. 127. Seems to be unsettled, always on the move, can't hold a job for very long. 128. Has a constant looming fear of a major catastrophic or apocalyptic event. 129. Is known to others as a complainer, instigator, or malcontent. 130. Has been rejected by others for being odd, eccentric, or stubborn. Scoring. Count how many statements apply to this individual based on the criteria discussed at the beginning of this checklist. If you find that this individual has 20 to 25 of these features, this is a person who will occasionally take an emotional toll on others and may be difficult to live or work with. If the score is 26 to 60, this indicates that the individual has all the features of and behaves as a paranoid personality. This person needs help and will cause turmoil in the life of anyone close to him or her. If the score is above 60, this person has a preponderance of the major features of a paranoid personality and is an emotional, psychological, financial, or physical danger to you or others, even to him or herself. Immediate actions. If you're involved with an individual like this who meets the preponderance of the criteria for a paranoid personality, you have a tough road ahead. When the features of such individuals are mild, they will wear on you because they question everything and are suspicious and untrusting of others, including you. Over time, they can become even more suspicious, more stubborn, more single-minded, and more rigid in their thinking. That is a challenge for any long-term relationship, or for a family. If they're at the more extreme or toxic end of the spectrum, they can be very difficult, argumentative, hyper-suspicious, or just plain dangerous. The problem is no one can predict their reactions, nor what will trigger rage or violence on their part. What we do know is that the more features of paranoia they have, the greater their instability and danger. And of course, they can become radicalized extremists, bringing danger to others and themselves, much as Unabomber Ted Kaczynski did. Trying to convince, persuade, or argue with them is usually non-productive and, in fact, may backfire, as you may be seen as the enemy for disagreeing with them or not seeing things with their unique or special clarity. Trying to get them professional help may not be easy either. No matter where they are on the spectrum, low or high, they don't think anything is wrong with them, which is why these individuals rarely seek help. That alone is a tough or an impossible hurdle to overcome. You can try to get them some professional help, if they'll go, but please be very careful. Because these personalities are suspicious of others and are perennial wound collectors, your efforts may turn them against you, making them more suspicious of you or propelling them to violence. At work, these individuals may be aggravating because they question everything. They can create problems among colleagues and drive wedges in an otherwise collegial work environment. Frankly, most bosses get tired of having to explain or justify decisions or hear their complaints, so they marginalize them. There's no doubt that having a paranoid personality in the workplace is a liability, not just from the divisiveness they sow, but also because of how they may lash out at perceived slights. Individuals who score high on the paranoid personality checklist need to be monitored for signs of aggression, especially if they're reprimanded, cautioned, or demoted, but particularly if they're fired. In situations where the spouse of an employee has all the features of the paranoid personality, there's also the danger that a domestic dispute, jealousy, or paranoid ideation may expose people at work to danger that had origins at home. When I read about an ex-husband coming to his ex-wife's workplace to shoot her and everyone else in sight, I have to wonder yet again if this was the work of an acutely troubled, paranoid personality. If you are in an industry against which activists have made threats, or that has been targeted by extremists, abortion clinic, medical research, chemical industry, animal research, timber industry, construction, atomic energy, coal production, electrical grid, plastics, to name a few, you may become the focus of a paranoid personality. Thus, the potential for danger or violence is much higher. Care needs to be taken when dealing with the paranoid personality at home or at work, especially if there are indications that the individual has a history of violence or weapons use. Since we can't predict what will trigger someone's violent behavior, all we can do is look at past behaviors, where they reside on the dangerous personalities checklist, if there have been recent stressors, divorce, relationship breakup, demotions, job loss, increased drug or alcohol use, etc., and the presence of weapons in the person's life. If these things are all present, it makes for a very dangerous mixture. Just remember the story of Jimmy Lee Dykes mentioned earlier, his neighbor's experiences, the killing of a bus driver, the abduction of a child from a school bus, barricading himself with the child in his bunker, all because this paranoid personality received a summons. While history is replete with examples of those who fit the criteria of the paranoid personality who did great harm, most of the harm these individuals do is on an interpersonal level at home or at work. Nevertheless, we have a responsibility to warn others if we have confirmed that this person has a majority of the features of a paranoid personality. We may just spare them a lot of pain and agony. If you encounter these individuals, recognize what they are first and foremost. Don't try to argue with or convince them. If they appear dangerous in any way, or if they ask you to assist in committing dangerous or criminal acts, the best action is to get away and warn others if possible. If their behavior becomes too much for you to bear, if it's too taxing or too dehumanizing, this happens a lot in cults, or if they drain the happiness out of your life, then distance yourself. You don't have to suffer needlessly. If you decide to stay, you now have been forewarned of what you can expect, so don't be surprised if things don't get better. Don't end up like the wife of Colonel Frank Fitz in the movie American Beauty, or for that matter like my neighbor's wife in Miami, empty, resigned, joyless. But be careful, because if these individuals self-isolate, isolate you, become convinced that there are no alternatives left, or become radicalized, they can become extremely violent. For additional strategies, see Chapter 6, Self-Defense Against Dangerous Personalities. Chapter 4, What's Mine is Mine, and What's Yours is Mine. The Predator. The eyes fixed on mine were unblinking, reptilian, and utterly calm. As I stared back, I heard a faint rattle that spoke to me of danger. I was nowhere near a snake. I was a young police officer in the 1970s, standing in a hallway where I'd just arrested a burglar who would set off an alarm. He obeyed my commands, and I was able to handcuff him without incident. But I'm not ashamed to say that even though I'm 6'1" and the suspect was secured, as he stared at me, I shook. There was something about that look that was unlike any I'd seen before. The sounds I heard were the bullets rattling in my service revolver, as my brain and body instinctively recognized that I was in the presence of a human predator. When I checked his criminal record back at the office, it was all there. This man was a recently released convict who was a hardened criminal with a long track record of burglaries, robberies, and assault. You can tell someone about evil. You can make scary movies. You can write about dangerous personalities. But until you're in the presence of evil, you don't really know it. Not at a deep psychological level. That was what I experienced that day. It was a lesson I never forgot. My subconscious brain was warning me that this was not your average criminal. It was a lesson I later grew to appreciate, the effect predators have on us on a subconscious level. At some point in life, everyone reading this book will encounter someone like this, a person not bothered by being arrested or by committing a crime, who seems untroubled by the suffering they cause others. Of all the dangerous personalities, the predator causes the most harm. According to the renowned psychologist and psychopathy researcher Robert Hare, Ph.D., there are millions of these individuals out there. This is why there's every reason to think you have been, are, or will be in contact with one at some point in your life. Predators really have only one goal, exploitation. They do what we can't imagine, easily and repeatedly. They live to plunder, rob, victimize, or destroy. While most of us build our lives around relationships and achievements, predators focus on opportunities to use people, places, and situations for their own gain. This default setting governs much of their behavior. These individuals don't think as we do. We care about others. They pretend to care or simply don't. We see each other as equals. They see us either as opportunities or as obstacles in fulfilling their needs. If they need a car, they steal one. If they need sex, they rape you. If they need money, they go after your grandparents' bank account. If you survive one of these individuals, a part of you still dies, be it trust, self-worth, dignity, or faith in others. Our trusting nature puts us at a disadvantage with these personalities, as they're unfettered by emotional attachments, conscience, morals, laws, or ethics. For them, life has no stop signs. Rules, regulations, restrictions, locks, or fences are mere inconveniences to work around. And because you and I play by the rules, they view us as saps, losers, or objects of contempt, worthy of devaluation, derision, abuse, and perhaps elimination. Thus, while we engage in honest work to become successful, predators measure their success by how well they've exploited us. Exquisitely skilled at detecting weaknesses, they target the vulnerable, the injured, the struggling, the gullible, the susceptible, the young, or those who can't fight back. Then they pounce, sometimes with subtlety, at other times with feral ferocity. Just from how someone moves or even looks, the predator knows whom to target. They select the helpful pedestrian who can be lured toward a car to give directions. The shopper laden with heavy packages, the child too trusting of an adult stranger, the lone teenager taking a shortcut, the naive elderly couple, the homeowner who willingly opens her door. All this they can do without thinking about it. It's like software running constantly in the background, scanning for opportunities and weaknesses. They know which chat rooms to enter to lure your child into their grip without breaking into your home. They know how to scam Medicare and Medicaid, costing us billions in fraud. They know which banks are easiest to rob and which stores are easy to shoplift from. They know how to hide in prestigious organizations, perhaps a hospital, a charitable organization, a police department, a school, an athletic program, or a church, aware that occupational legitimacy confers both access and cover for their predation. Predators such as Ted Bundy, John Wayne Gacy, and Jeffrey Dahmer stand out because of their notoriety as serial killers. But such monsters are only a very small part of the picture. Every serial rapist, pimp, pedophile, trafficker in humans, and mobster is a predator. So are those who target the elderly or children for abuse. Some we read about. Some are so famous or notorious that they're immortalized in books and in the movies. Bank robber Jesse James, Butch Cassidy, Jack the Ripper, John Dillinger, Al Capone, Pablo Escobar, Ian Brady, James Whitey Bulger, Jr., and the dapper Don John Gotti are all predators. The only difference is their particular preference for exploitation or criminal behavior. While prisons are full of these individuals, far more walk the streets. You don't have to be killed or raped to be severely harmed by predators. They beat their spouses, abuse patients, terrorize employees, embezzle money, prey on the faithful, corrupt public office, or as heads of state exterminate their own people. They carry briefcases, laptops, backpacks, Bibles, soccer balls, and babies. But they also carry knives, guns, machetes, ice picks, poison, and ropes. They may be your boss, your religious leader, your cube mate, your financial advisor, your child's camp counselor, your mother's caregiver, your babysitter, the next person you welcome into your bedroom, or your next-door neighbor. George J. Trepal, a member of the High IQ Society Mensa and a chemist by training, wasn't fond of his neighbor Peggy Carr or of her kids, who, like most kids, made noise when they played outside. So in 1988, he poisoned Peggy with cold indifference and nearly killed her children by placing thallium in Coke bottles while they were away. For a predator, apparently, this is a legitimate quick fix to a problem. In 1978, near Quartzsite, Arizona, John Lyons stopped the family car to help stranded motorists Gary Tyson and Randy Greenewalt. They rewarded his good Samaritan generosity by killing him and his family. Why? Like Trepal, they needed a quick and efficient fix for their problem. After all, they had just escaped from prison and they didn't want to be found. The patients of Dr. Harold Shipman in Hyde, England, thought they were in a safe place in the hospital, the best place to be if you're seriously ill, but not if you were one of Dr. Shipman's patients. Between 1971 and 1998, he killed in excess of 200 of his patients, enriching himself by taking their jewelry and money or fraudulently naming himself in their wills. For two decades, it was thought that Tim and Juanita Hoyt were an unlucky couple whose children had died from sudden infant death syndrome, SIDS, until investigators looked closely and found Juanita was intentionally killing them one by one. Those children, like Dr. Shipman's patients, were in a safe place, but not with a safe person. They were with a predator. They died simply because she did not want to deal with their crying, so she suffocated them, one at a time, usually within months of their birth. As we can see, it's not the location, neighborhood, highway, hospital, or home that makes us safe, so much as whether or not there's a predator lurking nearby. It is these individuals' presence, or access to you, and their intrinsic callousness that increases your risk of being victimized. The outcome, whether or not someone will be tormented or victimized, live or die, is up to them. This was a lesson learned by true crime writer Ann Rule, who worked at a crisis hotline in the 1970s, and later wrote a fascinating book about working next to someone who, it turned out, was a predator, and not just any predator, but the infamous serial killer Ted Bundy. The only reason she lived to write The Stranger Beside Me is that he didn't target her. When you think of predators, picture a hurricane or tornado, a massive force that can leave a giant debris field of human suffering behind. For every person this individual harms directly, many are harmed indirectly. Every relative, spouse, child, and friend of every victim suffers. Children abused by a predator may grow up to be traumatized adults or abusers themselves, and other generations may follow. The predator's family and friends can suffer public shame, scorn, or financial distress. Bernard Madoff's wife has been ridiculed, spat on, and ostracized as a result of his conviction for scamming investors of billions. 2 years after Madoff's arrest, his son Mark hanged himself. He could not live with the torment of what his father had done and how he might be implicated. Look at how many have lost their faith in the Catholic Church because of the massive scandal of sexual predators cloaked in vestments. Neighborhoods haunted by predators become danger zones where people have to barricade themselves in their own homes because of muggings, robberies, and burglaries. New York City is